I am extremely pleased to introduce the next speaker, who is, well, all the speakers in this room are good, I should say. So I don't want to be like, one of these, this speaker's better than all the others, but I'm really excited about the topic, and so I'm pleased to introduce Denver Gingrich, who is going to speak about LGPL enforced in Germany, how we helped a purchaser use the courts to compel compliance. Thanks, Denver.
Thank you. All right, so I'll jump in here. First, a little about me. I'm Denver Gingrich. That's my website. The main work I do is as Director of Compliance at Software Freedom Conservancy. I also work a couple hours a week on jmp.chat, which gives you phone number freedom. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit first about copyleft, what it is. So it is the software right to repair and modify, to improve your devices, make them do what you want. The heart of it is this right to fix and improve your software. Now, this is text from the preamble of LGPL version 2.1, saying if you distribute copies, you must give the recipients all the rights that we gave you. So the rights that you received, the right to compile, modify, and install the software, so you must pass those on to other people if you are distributing this software to them. And who gets those rights? Well, the person you gave it to. So in the case of, say, a wireless router, the person who purchased that wireless router containing LGPL software. And how do they get them? Well, hopefully, they just ask for the source code, and then they receive the complete source code. And if that doesn't happen, they should have the right to sue to get that. Now, the LGPL version 2.1 goes into some more detail about what this means in the preamble. It says you must provide the scripts used to control compilation and installation of the executable. So I think that's pretty clear, and we'll get into some even more detail on that in a little bit. So what are we talking about? We're talking about this right here, the Fritzbox 4020, a very popular router made by ABM. Which I understand is the largest manufacturer of wireless routers in Germany. And so what exactly happened with this Fritzbox router? Well, it had an offer for source code in it, and the purchaser of the device requested the complete source code per that offer. Now, the complete source code was not received, and months of discussion, actually I believe it was over 2 years now, the purchaser is actually in the front row here, Sebastian Steck, and he, yes, big round of applause. And he went back and forth, I believe, for more than 2 years on this before filing a lawsuit. And so he gave AVM a lot of time to get it right. And they didn't, so he filed the lawsuit. Now, before I get into the details of the lawsuit, I just wanted to note that a little bit about Software Freedom Conservancy's involvement. So we did fund the lawsuit and we supported it, but we were not the plaintiff. As noted, the plaintiff is Sebastian here. Also, I did want to mention that I did reach out to AVM and I said, you know, we'd love to have a discussion with you at FOSDEM about this lawsuit. And they said they were not available to talk about it. So I will be providing you the information that I can. Sorry, AVM is not here. I did try very hard. So the details we have are primarily at this website. This is linked also from the news item and the blog post that we made about the lawsuit. So you can find things like the complaint, any court decisions along the way, and also the exhibits and links to the source code, which I'm going to talk about in a minute here. So as noted, the plaintiff was a purchaser of the device. AVM claimed to have source code for this device, and what AVM provided was not the complete source code. And therefore, in Germany and many other jurisdictions, the purchaser has a right to sue. And in particular, this lawsuit was about these four projects, which are all under LGPL version 2.1. Sebastian chose to make the lawsuit about LGPL Works, and it causes a very interesting result because it shows us that even the lesser GPL does provide us all the same rights for compilation and a reinstallation of modified versions of the works onto the device as the GPL does. So that's very fascinating. Now, a brief interlude here. I want to talk a little bit about Use the Source, which is a project that we started at Software Freedom Conservancy last year. Actually, we launched it at FOSDEM 1 year ago. So it's a great place to be talking more about it today. And Use the Source, the goal is to show you a bunch of source code of different products and projects so that you can do interesting things with it. And you can show us, you can tell us how you did those interesting things. So there are a lot of different products whose source candidates we put up there. And I say candidates because unfortunately not all of them are complete source code. But that is generally the goal, so that you can show what interesting things you do. And if you're not able to do interesting things, maybe it's not in compliance with the license, and that's why you're not able to do interesting things. We also do note that as well. So I would recommend going there if you want to. At some point, I'm going to be going through the AVM source candidates that we've published there throughout this talk. I'll go into some detail, but if you view them on that page, you can get a little bit more insight as well. So let's see what we can do with it. What did they initially provide? So this is round one, they provided a tarball. And it had a bunch of tarballs inside of it, and they had no instructions of any sort at the top level of the tarball. So what Sebastian did was he took a look and saw, well, what should I try compiling here? And so he thought, well, I'll start with GCC, the compiler, probably good to start there so I can build the rest of it. And then he tried to do some of the things that you would, you know, might think to do, like type make, since there was a make file, and run this shell script. And none of those worked. They resulted in a bunch of errors. And so this is part of what Sebastian wrote back to AVM. This is the English translation that Sebastian provided. He sent them this in German. And there's clearly some problems here with these scripts used to control compilation. Now, that was not the only problem. There were also problems with the scripts used to control installation. In fact, it seemed that there may be no such scripts at all. And so Sebastian noted that for completeness when he was talking to AVM. And so here we are, well over 2 years before the lawsuit began. And this is what Sebastian is telling to AVM. So they go back and forth a bunch by email. And also Sebastian tells them, well, you know, I'm gonna try to help you out here and try to fill in some of these missing pieces. And so Sebastian wrote a bunch of scripts so that he could get to compliance faster because he wanted to be helpful and make sure that ABM was getting everything they needed, even though he wasn't required to do that. Like, ABM is out of compliance. It's their responsibility to make these. But he wanted to fix it quickly, so he attempted to do that for them. And in the last candidate before the lawsuit was filed, this is round two here, we have all of these scripts written by Sebastian. And then AVM added some other things. One example is this kernel layout environment variable, which was kind of one of the major missing pieces from the scripts use control in, compilation. That value was needed from AVM still in order to complete the compilation, because it was not obvious what device type should go in there, because it's all using code names that are kind of internal and not obvious. And there were also, to somewhat of AVM's credit, some other scripts written by AVM. However, these scripts did not give Sebastian the same rights to install as AVM had, that is, the right to install modified versions of the software onto the router. Now, this is a problem. And so because of this problem, and because it had been so long, and it was clear AVM was not going to do anything about it without a lawsuit, Sebastian filed the lawsuit. So the lawsuit progressed. You can read the filings and things on the website as much as we have and can publish due to the way the German legal system works. It's not public record by default. So if you would like, you can ask AVM for their filings. We were not able to publish those ourselves. But that you know, it can show some more information if you're interested. Now, so we went back and forth with these filings. That is to say, Sebastian and AVM went back and forth with filings. And eventually, AVM did provide the scripts used to control installation. So this was very exciting. And so that effectively ended the case. The lawsuit was about this LGPL compliance, which Sebastian got. And Sebastian very nicely shared the scripts with us as well. So these scripts used to control compilation and installation. He gave them to us at Software Freedom Conservancy. And so we were able to post them on Use the Source so that everyone could have the complete source code for the LGPL works on this AVM router. Now, AVM has still not posted these scripts on their website. I'm not sure why. That would make things a lot easier for people. I checked this morning. I still couldn't find them. And so we would encourage AVM to publish those on their website. We think that would be a better way as opposed to having to have people ask them for the source code again and them maybe going back and forth. I hope they would provide you these if you asked for them per their offer, but I don't know how they respond to that. So you may be interested in what these scripts used to control installation actually look like. What is compliant with the license? Well, I'll go into some details here, quote a few parts of these scripts. And also just to kind of clarify here what we're talking about. So scripts scripts can be viewed broadly. We didn't say to AVM, you need to provide us with shell scripts that do all of these things to install it onto the device. We said it's okay if you provide things in a human language, and in particular, they provided these scripts in German, and they're primarily a set of German instructions with a few notes to use certain shell scripts or other programs along the way. And so what I'm going to quote here is the English translation that Sebastian provided to us of these German scripts from AVM. Both of them are included in the source package on Use the Source. So the first thing you need to do is you get these original firmware images from AVM, download them from their website or otherwise, and then you unpack them. And it provides specific commands to use to do that. Then you replace the desired files with specially generated files. So here they're talking about the files that you may have modified, these LGPL works. So you can replace the ones in the firmware image with the ones you have modified. And then you pack those back into an image file, and they provide the commands that you would use to do that. Then you run this command right here, and this installs that firmware, including your modified LGPL works, onto the device. And finally, you supply the Fritzbox 4020 with power and achieve great success, because you are now running the modified versions of the LGPL works on the router. So this is wonderful. We are very happy to have these scripts and have been able to share them with you as well. Now, what exactly is it we won? Well, we got all the rights that the software developers gave to AVM, that is, the right to compile, modify, and install the software. And we're very happy about that. We got the source code. And also, interestingly, ABM also chose to pay Sebastian's legal costs in this case. So essentially, the case was settled, but Sebastian got everything he asked for in the lawsuit. So anyway, I think that's an interesting result. The GPLs, by which I mean the AGPL, LGPL, and GPL, give rights to recipients. That's what we knew. And then Sebastian has shown us that if you weren't given those rights, you can get them by suing if you need to. So you may be interested in some other work that Software Freedom Conservancy does to promote copyleft and make sure people can make practical use of the freedoms that they have, that is to be able to reinstall changes onto the devices that they have. So we show people how it's done. We make our own hardware. We made the OpenWRT1 this past year in collaboration with OpenWRT, which is our member project. And we, of course, provided the complete source code from day one for that, not just because it was required, since it is, but because obviously we want to have people's ability to do as they want with their devices to be front and center. If you have an OpenWRT1, you can get the source code by using the offer on the box. It's also on Use the Source. And just in case, we also etched the offer for source code into the PCB. So if you have an OpenWRT1, you can open it up, take a look at the bottom of the PCB, and you'll have your offer for source code right there as well. So we don't like to sue. We would like things to get resolved without lawsuits, but in case a company is not in compliance and it has been some time, as was the case in Sebastian's suit, we sometimes do need to sue people. So sue companies, that is. So in this case, Vizio here, we bought a Vizio TV. We wanted to make an OpenWRT-like system for the Vizio TVs. So we bought the TV and requested source code. We did not receive the complete source code. In fact, we still haven't to this day. And so we are in the middle of this lawsuit with Vizio. It goes to trial in September. And we are, of course, hopeful for a positive result there. So we also discuss the code that we get, as I mentioned, on Use the Source. I would encourage you to check out Use the Source and see what we have on that website. And I'd really encourage you, too, to upload any source candidates you receive so that people can see them and we can discuss those all together. So I just wanted to highlight that Use the Source again. Check it out. Also, if you like our work, I'd encourage you to become a Software Freedom Conservancy sustainer. And as you might expect for a talk of this nature, the complete source code for these slides are also available. So you can go to that slides link, go to the last page, and then tap on the slide source available. So thank you very much. I'll take some questions. And thank you to Sebastian.
Yeah, so I'm curious, why were they required to publish the source code for LGPL software, since this is generally used for libraries and they tend to be dynamically loaded, and basically this requirement would not be applied unlike GPL or AGPL. So what was the software provider relationship with the upstream LGPL project in order for this constraint to be applied?
So the LGPL requires that you provide the complete source code for all the LGPL works if you are distributing those LGPL works to someone else. So if you have something that depends on an LGPL library, and you only distribute that thing and not the LGPL library itself, then perhaps there are other ways to comply. But in this case, ABM was distributing both the thing that was linked to this LGPL library and the LGPL library itself. So if that's what you're doing, then you need to provide the complete source code for the LGPL library.
Hi. Thank you for your talk. I'm wondering what's the general feedback from the, like, how do judges, attorneys, and such handle the subject? Because I guess most of them are not familiar at all with those technologies and those licenses. And so do they feel like, I mean, how does that happen?
Sure. So in a general sense, and just to back up here a little bit, I'm not a lawyer. I don't provide legal advice, all of that stuff. So to answer your question, I mean, it just what I've seen generally is, lawyers do what they can with the facts that are available. In the case of ABM, looking through the filings, it appears that an expert would have been called if necessary later on in the case. It sounds like due to how things worked out, that was not necessary. In lawsuits in the United States, often experts are introduced earlier in the case, and so that's usually what happens there, speaking not as a lawyer, just as someone who's looked at some legal filings.
Thanks for the interesting talk. Nowadays, many devices, even in the embedded world, use techniques like secure boot, for instance, to make it impossible to run something that is not signed by the vendor. And especially for the low-cost devices, usually that's a one-way street, so you cannot like revert the secure boot mode once it is applied. How does it work out in this case? Can the vendor then provide a special unlock device for you, or does it need to run on the same device, or how does it work?
So there's a famous story of a printer so most people know. Anyway, it seems like the person who wanted to change the software on their printer did not want to buy a brand new printer to install that software onto. They wanted to do it on the device that they had with them already. And so, there may be different ways that companies try to impede your ability to reinstall. The LGPL and the GPL say you need to have the scripts used to control compilation and installation. So, whether you do that by wiping out the some chip that requires a key or something like that. I mean, it's not specific in what it says you must do, as long as that is achieved.
Hi, Devin. Thanks for the talk. AVM was sued not because they're the manufacturer, but because they were the seller, right?
AVM was the manufacturer, is my understanding here.
Right, but yep. Do you sue the manufacturer or the guy who provided you the router, guy who sold you? Right.
Yeah. I think it will be faster to sue the manufacturer because the distributor will probably just point at them. But that's just me as not a lawyer, etc.
In your dealings with this and other companies, how much of this is bad faith or malice on their side versus incompetence, or they just never thought about it before?
Yeah. Very good question. I, of course, wish that it were, incompetence, sadly, because that would be perhaps easier to fix. But we found that a lot of times companies appear to be establishing a line they made up, and they are just sticking to that line. And so that's why we unfortunately need lawsuits. I don't know if that's the case in any particular one. It just feels like it in some cases for me.
We have one last question here.
I understand where you're getting the. You need to provide the scripts that control compilation installation. No problem. You seem to be inferring an additional requirement that those scripts succeed in an environment outside of the manufacturer. Let's say that I'm a manufacturer. I've got my scripts. They require my internal key signing. They require my internal infrastructure. They call out to these things. I give you my exact scripts. Calls out to internal server 1, internal server 2, gets a bunch of keys, signs a bunch of stuff, does all this stuff. it absolutely was the exact script I used. I provide it to you. You try and run it. Fails. As expected, because you're not in my environment. What are you relying on for the idea that the script has to actually succeed in any other environment?
So as I mentioned, the scripts can include, if, for example, your scripts do not successfully complete by themselves, then you can add instructions in, you know, German or English or whatever to describe how it completes. The issue here is that it sounds like in your situation that you're describing, you as the manufacturer are able to compile modified versions and install them on the device. And so that is what we're talking about here, is passing on those rights. As mentioned in the preamble, you have to give those rights to compile and install onto the user. So that is what you have to do, and that is what we will sue to make happen. I think my time is up, so thank you very much.